Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
There we go. That was a crispy one at the end. Second one's crispy. Second one's crispy. It is a Tuesday edition here on Zero Block 30. Oh, shit. I don't have my sheet up. Hold on. I need to find my sheet.
maybe that could be helpful.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's that kind of day. Oh, my God. Starting the show with me on Firewatch for not having it up. Normally, I do all the checks. I go through the whole list. I'm even in the wrong email account. This is going to take a minute.
Goodness gracious.
2 to 4 a.m.
2 to 4 a.m. What am I doing?
You need to clean this shit up. There, Staff Sergeant.
I do. I need to fucking police my own shit. I can't even find the docs. We're still going through.
As someone who always has her shit together, I just have to say I'm really ashamed of you right now.
Okay, that's fair. Cons, any other things while Google Documents continues to load?
Yeah, well, you know what? I would just expect more from you, and I know that you know you expect more of yourself. So I trust you'll get this.
Myself.
You'll get this squared away.
And I am ready now because today we have 5 rounds in the magazine. Round number 1, The Last Dance is the greatest 10-part docuseries of all time.
Whoa. Are we counting Band of Brothers? Because I will not allow that in
okay,
this.
Okay, Band of Brothers is better. But there are lessons we can learn from Michael Jordan's domineering attitude about life and competition. Round number 2, Long Drag on a Cigarette. Back in my day, the recruits at Marine Corps boot camp weren't so pussy. They needed a falcon to protect them from the seagulls. Shit's changed. We'll tell you about this new breed of mask-wearing softcore softies. Round number 3, our career day series continues. We've gone through several jobs that most people don't know about, and today we're going to tell you about 10 jobs from World War II era and see if Kate would enlist again to do any of those.
Ooh.
Round number 4, we're going to continue the career day series. See how we did that? Round 3, we talked about more. Now we're bringing it back. Round number 4, we're going to have Patrick McCavitt, who is a Naval Academy grad and Marine Corps operation analyst. He's going to tell you what that means because I still cannot do it. His job actually seems pretty interesting. I would like to do that. I think that that would be a fun thing to do. If you have to do one of those bullshit officer jobs that before you go to company command or right after company command, that would be a pretty cool one to have. And finally, round number 5, Jerry Stiller, who's best known as Frank Costanza, died this weekend of natural causes. He told a story in the New York Times article in 1997 that encapsulates every single veteran at every bar whenever they're telling their stories. I love this story and hearing from him about his life in 1997. And all of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at, shit, don't have the ads up yet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What? Manscaped. I don't have the ads up, but I do have the old pube region trimmed back because the flowers are blooming. And the grass is growing, the hedges are growing everywhere, including in tu pantalones, which is Spanish for your pants. You have to make sure that you trim that down because it's about to be, folks, it's about to be swamp ass season. I was outside a lot more this weekend than normal. I was out on the golf course with my family for Mother's Day, and it is swamp ass season big time where you have the ass cheek sweats, you have the ball bag sweats, you have all kinds of sweats. You need to make sure that you trim that down so you can be a little bit smoother because, lest we forget, this isn't something that people talk about. They always talk about the appearance of shaving down the old pubes. Let's talk about the smell for a minute, folks. If you have a thick garden down there, your potatoes start to stink.
The weeds.
And they just stink like some rotten fucking veggies. You need to make sure that you're getting rid of that pubic hair. Do it with our good friends at Manscaped. Manscaped.com/zero. They're going to give you 20% off with their free shipping at manscaped.com if you use a promo code zero. It's spring cleaning, baby, and your balls will thank you. Make sure you get that perfect package 3.0 kit, the lawnmower 3.0 waterproof cordless body trimmer. It is amazing. I have it. I use it. It's great. Let's start.
Jerry Stiller just couple days ago, I want to say it was 2 or 3 days ago, I went for a very long jog for the first time in a long time. And I met up with one of the bocce people who we had our masks on. We stayed like the 6 feet apart or whatever, but they were also running. Guess where we ran by?
The Costanza's, Jerry Stiller. The Costanza's old house
is only like a mile from my apartment. And so I think it was literally the day before he passed. We stood outside of that house and I took a picture of it and everything. And it was right there. So nothing about me or anything, but just kind of crazy timing that I finally went to go see it. I knew it was in this neighborhood. And then the next day, but yeah, what a talent. I was watching today.
Did you do anything weird at that house like we did at the Full House house?
No, I did not pretend that the Costanza house was a real person and have a conversation with it. No. I was watching some of his blooper reels from Seinfeld today.
They're so good.
They are so, I was like having genuine belly laughs. So yeah,
I was
talent.
Too. I watched the one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus whenever he said, "You want a piece of me?"
Yeah.
And she can't help but like break out laughing.
Yeah.
And that's when I don't understand how people do that with characters like Kramer or characters like Frank Costanza. I don't understand how you can constantly not be laughing.
Right.
Who was it in Saturday Night Live that was constantly laughing?
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon was always laughing.
He was terrible at it.
And so Will Ferrell was pretty bad about it too, where he would be laughing. And you can occasionally see some on like The Office where you'll have Jim Palmer's character laughing in the back with Michael Scott. That kind of shit would be tough. And then you get on a giggle roll and you can't stop.
Yeah.
Because they say the same thing again and then
you're anticipating it. You're just waiting for him to say it and you know you're going to laugh.
Yeah.
It's a vicious cycle.
Crazy. Yep. Let's talk about some weekends. We had a big night in the group text last night with old Katie couldn't find her car. We have some big developments to share with you. Kate, how was your Sunday night? It was probably the most Sunday scaries I've heard in a long time.
Yep, sure was. So I definitely just in general had a big scary weekend in the old noodle. And it got so bad that I have this huge pile of mail that I keep inside one of my drawers where I never open it. I just keep it. And so, like,
If I keep it in there, it can't bother me. It can't
exactly.
get to me.
And so,
it's like the haunting for Joey that he puts in the freezer.
Exactly. But it turns out, though, you do miss some important shit, like some serious important shit when you don't check your mail ever.
Mm-hmm.
Lesson learned. Finally sat down last night and said, you know what? I'm going to rip this Band-Aid off. I'm going to start opening some mail. And I start opening it, and there's neon orange, neon orange, neon orange. I'm like, okay. Car ticket, car ticket, car ticket, car ticket, car ticket. And I'm looking, and I didn't see any past March, or actually past, like, I think like the first week of April.
So when's the last time you saw your car? Let's establish that. When's the last time you know that you had your car?
It was December. It was like right after Christmas. It was the end of December. And I had driven up from Philadelphia with no registration. And I got pulled over, actually.
And the engine was grinding, right? The engine was grinding really bad.
I got pulled over by the cops who let me go. That was a whole debacle in itself. They knew my car wasn't registered. I did have insurance, but they were like, this woman is a mess. I had a gobbler hoagie that rolled down the seat. I had golf clubs all over the place. They were like, oh my God. So finally, I get home that night up here in Queens, and I couldn't find a parking spot. And it took me genuinely about 2 hours of driving around. And finally, I was in tears. I just parked my car. I said, fuck it. I like snapped. I was like, whatever. And I just parked it, walked away, and then didn't go back for 6 months. So I knew I was getting these neon orange tickets in the mail, but then the ticket stopped. And I'm like, my car's got to be gone. And I'm the kind of person, I'm working on it, but I have incredibly high anxiety about stuff. And my way of dealing with it is avoidance. So I'm a hardcore ghoster. I am big at like just pretending stuff doesn't exist. I'll just block things out. So while everything's getting worse, I'm like, doo, 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 skeet, bee, dee, bee, dee, bee. Anyway, so that was what was happening with this car. And I got to the point where I couldn't even get near the block that it was on. I couldn't go down the street. I just didn't want to know. Ignorance is bliss. So finally last night, I'm opening all this mail and I'm like, you know what? They stopped doing alternate side parking right when my tickets stopped. So because of the virus and everything. So, oh my God, maybe there is a chance that my car is still there. So,
and you didn't even try just to go by the original spot. That's what's crazy to me. I could see like letting your car go and just parking it there, but occasionally going to see if it's there.
Yeah.
And then
once it's gone,
being like, fuck it, I don't care. It could be gone forever.
Right.
Like, and just getting rid of it that way, but not even checking that it's in its original location is nuts.
Wild move, right? So, I mean, I'm straight up nuts. There's no denying it. So, anyways, I finally last night, I'm like, okay. This is too much because I'm really trying to get my shit together now, like really, mm-hmm. really. So
quarantine season.
It is quarantine. What better time?
It's time to better yourself.
Yeah, it's time to better yourself.
When you're
yeah.
with no one but yourself for months, like you're like, you know what? You're not that great. You need to fix a couple things. So anyways.
It's a lot easier to focus on me when me is legit all you have.
Exactly. I'm like, oh,
well, yikes. No offense to Spork.
Yeah, no offense to Spork. He's right behind me. But so finally I decide to walk over there. And it's like about, I'd say a little over half a mile away. And I'm getting closer and closer. And my heart was in my neck. It was pounding. And when I got to the block, like tears came up in my eyes. And I called Cons. I was like, can I call you? I called him. And I was like, can you just be on the phone with me as I walk towards my car?
I'm like laying in bed. I'm watching The Last Dance. And I get this text. Can I call you? And to preface this, this wasn't just like Katie out of nowhere. I had said to her earlier, I was like, listen, if you need help, let me know. I'll help you. So that came in the form of a phone call later.
Dance recruit.
So I literally I'm almost down the block and I pause. I'm taking stutter steps. I'm taking like 1-inch steps. I'm freaking out. And finally he's like, just hit the button. Just start hitting the button and see. I hit the button and there at the end of the block is a faint little honk, a little glow of the headlights. And I'm like, oh,
hi,
my fucking
buddy.
God. So it's established that the car is there. I think I screamed into the phone. And then I make my way over to the car. Now the big scare is there a boot on my car? Has my car been booted? And I'm like, there has to be. Also, I parked like 3.5 feet off the curb. But I can't believe they didn't tow that.
I bet all the neighbors there like
hate me. So I get closer. There's no boot on it. I'm like, holy fuck. I look in. There's that Wawa gobbler. Cranberry sauce, gravy, stuffing, turkey. There it is, rolled up in the little shrivel of the seat. There's my old milkshake. There's all this shit in there that's been there for 6 months now. So now my concern is rats. I open up the car. I kick the trash can. Poor Cons is still on the phone.
Because they're hungry. They're not eating as much as they have been in New York.
Exactly. So that was the next thing. I kick around. There's no bugs. There's no mice, no rats, anything. I couldn't believe it. Now I get in the car, and I'm like, there's no way. It's been sitting through the freezing cold of winter 6 months. No way it's going to start. I turn the ignition. It takes a second. It starts. Now I'm
that's unbelievable.
Screaming into the phone. I'm like, God, let's go to this car. I like could not believe it. I start driving it. Now, it sounds like the wheels are going to fall off. The engine's grinding. The brakes are screeching. But it's right out in front of my apartment now, parked. So now I have to get it registered, which means that's what started fucking me up in the first place. I tried a couple times to get it registered. Didn't have the right paperwork each time. Blah, blah, blah. And I got so frustrated.
Well, what's the point of getting it registered at this point unless you're going to keep it and drive it?
Well, now that I have it again,
You should do Set My Ride, Katie.
Because now...
You should fix it up.
Exactly. Because now I can put Spork. Now I can travel with Spork, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
all
kind
right.
of a big deal. So I didn't think okay. about... So I'm sorry. That was a long, stupid story. But it's been this thing that's been on my mind.
It was funny, like being on the phone with you, if you've ever, this is not something people really do much anymore, but if you've ever listened to a live sporting event on the radio, you are just like alone with your own thoughts and you're relying on the broadcaster to paint the picture for you.
What do you see?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what it was like. I was like, all right.
Outside
so,
and in, that's ball three.
walk around, no boot. All right, keep going. It's like, all right, maybe there's rats. Be careful when you open that door. So it was exciting for me as well.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And also, one other thing, I had over $1,300 worth of fines. So that, none of that needed to happen. I did that to myself. I'm an asshole. I could have donated that money to a good cause.
What a shitty way to spend $1,300.
Yeah, horrible. But yeah. I will say, like, we talk about mental health on here all the time. Like, I tweeted out this thing last night. Like, when you're, like, super depressed or having a really hard time with anxiety, it makes the smallest things seem like the biggest mountains on the planet.
Very
and
daunting.
Once you start spiraling, it is so hard to stop. Yep. And I was like, you know, I'm still happy and I'm still functioning and still doing my job. But also, I was having a really hard time for a while again. And so, like, I don't know. It's crazy how I have so much empathy for people who are struggling because it is so hard to, like, just take that first step and rip the Band-Aid off and start facing things that you've been avoiding. So I'm really glad that I did that. Also, I bought a bicycle this weekend.
Oh, that's
so,
great.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. I know. You have a bike too. So maybe I'll bike to Texas and we can bike together. But I'm really excited about it. I'm picking her up today. I got all sorts of neat little hoots and hollers on it. So I'm pumped. Yeah.
Cons, how was your weekend?
I finally got to play golf, which I didn't think it would affect me as much as it did, but it really just set me into such a good mood. It really made me think, okay, maybe this whole thing is not that bad so long as I can get out and play golf. And I'll tell you what. In New Jersey right now, it's kind of funny. So the governor has stipulated that you can only play as a twosome unless you've been quarantined together. But basically, it's you're assuming all of the risks because you go to the golf course and we walk up and the guy says to us like, well, listen, we're supposed to send you off in two different carts, but it's up to you. Because, I mean, really, there's no way for them to know. I could walk up and say the guy I went with, my buddy, oh, yeah, we've been quarantined together. What's he going to say?
Yeah, we're roommates, yeah.
Yeah.
Mind you, we just spent 40 minutes in a car together, so what's the difference if we ride in a cart next to each other for 4 hours?
Right.
Exactly.
So I thought that part was a little funny, but I did enjoy the fact that there were only two sims because we just cruised through our 18 holes, which was very nice. Which brings me to my question for you, chaps. Mm-hmm. Was there just nobody else really on the golf course that you were able to have your entire family just out there kind of whacking away?
We had a 9:30 tee time and we were able to get off at 9:15, which gave us a little bit of room. Mm-hmm. Like the people right behind us weren't there, so we gave us a little bit of room. But I honestly, like, I was trying to teach them. That was the most frustrating part, is because I know that once people catch up to us, it's going to be stressful. Not for they won't know, but for me, it'll be stressful because I know like the rules and etiquette of golf, of what it should be like, and I don't want to ruin somebody else's time either because they pay good money to be out there. Mm-hmm. So like trying to speed them up and like get them through it. But then about halfway through the first nine, I was like, "Fuck it! Like let's just take our time, like do whatever we need to do." And so they had a great time. Like it was Annalisa's first time ever golfing on like a big golf course. It was Kelsey had unbelievable shot. Kelsey was 3 feet from the hole on a par three, like off the tee box.
That's awesome.
And just smoked it, hit it high up on the left side of the green, and it rolled down. I legit thought it was going to go in. It's like, if my 14-year-old daughter gets a hole in one before me, I will kill myself.
I would have been very annoyed if she got a hole in one, and I'm here. I am 35, playing since I was 11, still haven't gotten one.
Yeah, she was really close. Very, very close to getting a hole in one. But I had a really great weekend. I've put together in the last 10 days, I've put together four bikes. I put together Kelsey's first, which was a beach cruiser, then the Stomper 2x2 for McCartney. Then I put together a beach cruiser for my wife, and then I put one together for myself yesterday. I got the Margaritaville bike for myself with a little parrot horn. It's like a squeaky toy, and I was squeaking the shit out of it. It's got like a beverage holder. It's got leather handles on it, and it's got parrots and stuff all over it.
It's a beaut.
I did that this weekend. I built a bike rack that I'm going to have a video coming out from a pallet. I am terrible with a circular saw, but I actually know how to use a circular saw now because I did it. I made a bunch of mistakes, almost cut my leg off, but I...
Yeah, please be careful with power tools.
Yeah, but I'm just starting to give it a go. Like, things that I don't know how to do, I'm just going to step out of my comfort zone and do it. I'm going to build steps. Instead of hiring somebody to build the steps on my back porch, I'm going to do that. I sanded and grinded my ceiling, did retexturing, did repainting. It looks like you can't even tell it was ever... Something was messed up with it. I did more car stuff. I installed 6 speakers into my car, and it sounds fantastic. Into my new truck, it sounds fantastic. I actually ordered TVs to go in the headrest, which none of my family knows about. It's going to be a surprise whenever I put that in. So that'll be fun too. We have leather seats coming where I'm going to reupholster. I got all kinds of little projects going on, which feels weird. I'm even going to build a desk, a workbench, like to put all my new tools in, because buying that shit is expensive, and you can build one out of like 2x4s and a couple sheets of plywood for $30. So I'm going to try to do it, even if it doesn't look the best.
You were so upset when you lost your handyman, and now you have become the handyman.
I know. It feels good having like a little bit of stuff. And so I'm using it how I'm doing it in my mind. Because I think one of the big hurdles in learning how to do that stuff is investing in tools. Because that's a huge financial investment when you're talking about cordless drills and all this shit.
Adds up very quickly.
But if you look at it from the perspective of if I hired somebody to come out and build my steps, just that, I would probably pay $700 for that, like for their labor, for their knowledge, for all that stuff. You have to pay a premium to get it done nicely. If I learn how and take the time to do it, even if it doesn't look perfect and I like kind of grind at it a little bit, I'm not going to spend nearly that much money on materials, and I can afford to get, I'll pay half and I'll have the tool forever. So then the next time I need that, I'll already have it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely the preferred method. If you can do things yourself. And I think I said this the other week, when you have your own home and you start to realize, I better learn to do a few things around this place because I simply cannot afford to have someone come out every time some little thing happens. Because when you own a home, chaps, as you know, or you want to make upgrades to your home, Things just seem to happen all the time. They just
and I've been
break.
Fortunate because my first home that I own, we built.
Yeah.
Like we built here, so it was new, so I didn't have many issues. So I got kind of fortunate there. But it is nice. I my hands feel like manly again. They don't feel like
my hands
soft
look
little
like
baby
this,
hands.
So hers can look like this.
Right. I've cut my hands to shit trying to put my doors back on. Like half of my time doing the speaker stuff was putting the doors back on. I was constantly cutting. I was bleeding all over the place. And my hands are all cramped up because I'm using muscles I haven't used in a long time. But it feels good to be able to do some of these things. And my family has been shocked. Like when they got in my car and the speaker sounded nice, probably better than my old truck. It was professionally installed because I picked out the things I actually wanted. Everybody has been surprised. My mom is shocked that I care about doing any of this stuff at all. I might even change my own oil. Got a new light for my garage
wow.
so I can see in there at night if I need to do some stuff. Unbelievable. Let's get started with the actual show. We're going to move into round number one, which centers around the show The Last Dance, which has been taking the internet by storm because anything that involves Michael Jordan on live shows or on a docuseries, it's always must watch. I remember I probably purchased the DVD version of The Air Up There no less than 10 times.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, like The Air Up There, not The Air Up There, his
Air
Airness.
Bud.
His Airness is what I mean.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
It was like the original,
the
Michael Jordan docuseries.
Got it.
Where it went through his stuff, not The Air Up There.
With
that's
Kevin
the
Bacon.
Where they go to Africa, right?
Yeah, Kevin Bacon's a college coach and he goes and scouts the kid from Africa and has to like join his tribe. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a good movie too.
Yeah, it is.
But I didn't buy that one 10 times. So I've always been a huge Jordan fan. Because if you're my age, if you're 38 years old, you watch Jordan. It's just what you did. Like now they have these rules of how many times a certain team could be on national TV. That shit didn't exist in the late 80s, early 90s. It was the Pacers, Knicks were on TV.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls were on TV against whoever they were playing. The Lakers were on TV and the Celtics were on TV. That was essentially it.
But,
and the Suns.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look at back in the early 90s and then, you know, the middle to late 90s when they were playing, they were always in the finals. And back then, there weren't just as many channels. Network TV was a much bigger deal. So when the finals were on.
I mean, that's one of the best hooks of any show ever. The NBA on NBC filled my little room all the time because you could get it on over-the-air stations. I was constantly watching basketball. So this clip came out of Michael Jordan from the Last Dance where he talked about leadership and how because he was known as the greatest basketball player of all time, and people thought that he was going to be that for a long time as well because he was one of the greatest ACC players even as a freshman at North Carolina. He comes into the league, takes the league essentially by storm, not as much as he does with Scottie Pippen as his teammate, but Jordan is Jordan. And he says, we're actually going to pump in the clip. Here's the clip of Jordan talking about how leadership is he's not going to make anybody do something that he's not willing to do himself. Here he is. We play that clip because I think it's a very important distinction to make because you got posed the question this weekend, Cons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is Michael Jordan the type of guy that you would want in a foxhole with you? And what's your answer to that?
My answer is unequivocally yes, because for as selfish as he might appear...
Even though you got to dig it deeper because he's 6'6".
Yeah, because he's 6'6". Right, exactly.
Right. You'll be like peeking at like a little kid in the shallow end and he'll be like waist high.
I just think he epitomized everything you want in a teammate. Yeah, he was tough, but as we just played in that clip, he was never willing to ask you to do anything he wasn't going to do himself. And just the amount of drive that he had and how he was just so hungry to win that he was hungrier not to lose than he was to win. And someone like that who is going to be there next to you, working hard next to you, I'd take that guy in a foxhole any day of the week.
Put a rank on him.
Oh, Jordan's? Wow.
Ooh.
That's a really tough question.
Officer or enlisted? I almost want to say he's enlisted, but high. No.
I don't know. It's tough to see him driving around Range Rovers and Corvettes and smoking cigars all the time.
Captain.
And not think... Yeah, he's like a captain, maybe a major.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I think that he is a like one of those sergeant majors who is so fucking squared away that still runs like the perfect PFT, that he comes down, he has all these awards and shit like that, but he puts himself back on your level and like, look, I'm not asking you to go on this hump if I'm not going to do it too. What you're going to wear on this hump, I'm going to wear it times two. We're going to wear, everybody's wearing 50 pounds, I'm going to wear 100 pounds. And you're just like, God, if he was going to do this, I'm going to do it too. Mm-hmm. And you just look at him and you're like, you don't want to disappoint that guy. And I think that's what you hear so many stories about teammates of Jordan, who signing on to be his teammate is intimidating because you don't want to disappoint him.
Right.
One of my best friends in college, his name was Gavin. He played basketball at Penn State. And I wasn't a great athlete growing up. I was very average in everything that I did, essentially. I was never terrible, but I was always average at everything. And whenever we would go play basketball together at the Y, Gavin was so much better than me because he was a Division I. He played at Penn State. And whenever he would pass me the ball to shoot it, if I would be open, I'd be so disappointed in myself because I didn't want to let Gavin down because he was so much better than me. I can't imagine that. That's how these guys had to feel like playing with Jordan. You would feel that way for your old crusty sergeant major who's like perfect in your eyes.
Yeah, those are the best kind of leaders to me. The ones that motivated me the most are the ones I didn't want to disappoint. And you would do anything. I would do anything and work as hard as I needed to. There's no replacing good leadership, like, period. Also, I think he'd be good to have in a foxhole because even if he didn't give a fuck about you, he'd want to win. He is so competitive that there'd be no way. And third, I would love to see a war where we also have the Looney Tunes with us in the foxholes.
Oh, yeah.
A little Space Jam meets Taliban
Space
action.
Wars. Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know. I feel like that would be kind of hot in the streets. We'll see.
And another thing that reminded me of old veteran is because at the end of that clip, he cries.
Yeah.
And I think that's the ultimate veteran move when he's talking about his past experience, his past glory days of what he wanted to do. He's like, I wanted people to be the best they possibly could. Mm-hmm. And they weren't going to do it if I wasn't going to do it too. And then he gets teared up and he says, I need a minute. I can't say how many times I've done that on this show where I've talked about things that are important to me and been like, you know what? I need a minute.
Well, the question posed to him at the time was, did you want to win so bad that you didn't care about being liked? And he's like, if people just couldn't get on board with me, I'm sorry. That was the sacrifice I was willing to make. But you saw when you listen to his teammates talk, they all revere him. And they all said what a great teammate he was for all the gruff he gets about being competitive and cursing at his teammates and being tough on them. He was still that one who was right there behind them. The story about how he took Scott Burrell under his wing and said, like, I know you can be great, and I'm going to bring it out of you. That's the epitome of leadership.
Well, look at the people that, like, in the dichotomy of personalities that you have to be around. Same thing with military leadership.
Right.
You have like, not a Luke Walton. You have Bill Cartwright, who's there, the older veteran, who's been around forever. Mm-hmm. You got to relate to Bill. Then you got Dennis Rodman. You got Steve Kerr. You got John Paxson, BJ Armstrong. You have all these different personalities from all these different walks of life, all these different countries. A Horace Grant, who doesn't have a big personality at all. He comes with a twin brother. Like, you have all these different personalities around him, and he's got to mold that because you know that he is the centerpiece of everything. And being the centerpiece of any team that you're on is always difficult, and managing the personalities and how to bring out the best, it's leadership in spades. You could do so many different leadership studies on how star athletes teach essentially the people around them how to deal with their stardom.
And I mean I don't want to get into a too heated Jordan LeBron debate, but I think that's where LeBron, I don't know, maybe we'll see in 10, 15 years when LeBron's teammates talk about him, but I don't know that LeBron's teammates talk about him the way that Jordan's teammates talk about him, and I think that's the difference.
I think they will talk about him the same type of way, and I think that largely it's not fair. It's a different game than it was then, but I mean, I think that it'll be essentially like our generation doesn't even consider Bill Russell in the best basketball players of all time. It'll be the same thing. Like when people are 38 who watch LeBron their entire life, they won't even include Jordan, even though us old heads will be like, oh, hell yeah, it was all about Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to round number two. I love anything to do with Michael Jordan, man. I just love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Last night's episodes were the best ones so far, in my opinion.
He's just so, like, so real. Like in those moments when he's mm-hmm. watching, you just see so many things that you love.
Yeah.
Like when Gary Payton is talking shit about him, like saying that he tired him out and he just erupts in laughter. That's exactly what like an old sergeant major would do. It's like, oh yeah, I gave him hell. Like it's some first lieutenant or second lieutenant. It's like, I gave a sergeant major Jordan hell. He's like, fuck you. You didn't give me hell, man. You didn't give me shit.
You know, it'd be cool if his name tape wasn't his last name. It was just his number.
Oh, yeah. Little 23. Yeah. You know, I didn't put it together, I think, until Kate and I were doing a show. I never put it together as a young kid, and this is kind of embarrassing. Maybe I sound like an idiot, that he came back with 4-5 because it was 2-3-4-5.
Oh.
I never put that together.
That wasn't the reason. He wore 4-5 because that was his original number.
I know, but I never realized that it was sequential, like that it was 2-3-4-5.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. Whoa. I was like, whoa, why is it going back to 4-5? Great. All right, let's move on to round number two. Round number two is going to be brought to you by our friends at ExpressVPN. If you're not watching stuff on ExpressVPN, actually, I had to do this weekend. I felt like such an old person. Did you guys used to do torrents and shit like that?
Not really, no. I know
like
what you're
Napster.
For sure. Napster, yes.
Yeah.
What was the other one? BearShare?
LimeWire.
LimeWire. So before I started working at Barstool, I was torrenting everything. I was basically a pirate on the open internet seas, trying to get whatever I could. Well, now that I'm getting the TVs and the headrest, one of the things they have is the SD cards or USB stick you could stick on the side and have all the downloaded movies that you can watch so you don't have to buy these DVDs, because buying DVDs is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe I'll torrent them, but I don't want them to be able to tell, because before I start working at Barstool, I got two notices from AT&T that was like, hey bitch, you better stop fucking stealing. so I don't want to get in trouble, because the internet's kind of important for my job mm-hmm. to have, and you can get blacklisted. They don't do that with VPNs. And if you go to ExpressVPN, you can download stuff, you can find streaming shit from all over the world, anywhere you want to go. Protect your online family today by going to expressvpn.com/zero, and you can get extra 3 months for free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/zero. ExpressVPN.com/zero to learn more about how you can protect your ISP and all that other shit. IPN, maybe those three letters, something. You're going to protect your computer more than you would with incognito mode, because that doesn't do anything anyway. People would still see what kind of porn you're looking at. Mm. Let's go on to round number two, which is taking place out in lovely old Katie's old stomping grounds, Camp Pendleton. What's going on there?
Old Camp Pendleton. Have you guys ever been, this is one of the worst feelings ever. You go to the range, you get those boxed chows, which, mm-hmm. okay, they suck, but it's literally all you have to look forward to that day, because you're stuck on it. It's like the highlight of your day is the shitty box lunch. You guys go do your range shit, you come back, the boxes are getting torn apart by seagulls and crows, and your leadership's like, too bad. You know, like you're just like, fuck me. That's the only thing I was looking forward to.
The little box nasties are all fucked up.
Yeah, god damn it. They took my buns. So, yeah, that is always a devastating feeling. And it has been getting real bad. And as somebody who's been shit on in the face by a seagull before, I was on my grandma's deck at Seattle City, New Jersey. She always would save the bags of bread and keep the heels of the bread, you know, the little crumbs, so we could go down on the beach and toss them. Well, I was out in her patio. And I was throwing the breadcrumbs in the air, and all these seagulls were above me. And all of a sudden, I didn't feel it hit. I just felt that my nose felt warm, and then I felt dripping into my mouth. Yeah, seagull. And then I panicked. I went to run inside crying. I was maybe 9. And then I hit the screen door. So then my shitty face smashed against the screen door. I've had a hate thing with seagulls my entire life. So anyways, this story stuck deep with me. Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego has turned to a California-based falconry service to chase away Western gulls interfering with training spaces at boot camp. First of all, being a dog handler, that's cool. After you get out of the military, a lot of people go on to, they train dogs the rest of their lives. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Falcon trainer. In my wildest dreams, I would never think like you can get all sorts of jobs being a falcon trainer. That's sick.
Yeah, this is like the number one falconry podcast, I think, in the world.
Huge. I'm going to be honest. Falconry podcast.
I thought there was one job and one job only for a falconer, and that would be to handle the mascot at Air Force. Beyond that, yeah. I had no idea if there were any jobs With Falcon.
And this one pays well. Like, once we get into the details of this story, it's going to blow your mind how much these folks make.
Yeah, so the Gulls were not so much, I guess, eating box chows or shitting on anyone's mouth, but the Gulls interfere with outdoor training on obstacle courses and confidence courses, causing damage to electrical connections on solar panels, stucco on historic facilities.
Oh, not our precious stucco.
Stucco, they're making it up slightly. During the nesting season, April to July, they become aggressive and can attack personnel and visitors aboard the depot. My favorite videos, I hope they have a few, where those door cams capture people getting attacked by geese and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that really famous one where that group of, I think it's sailors, they're all walking.
Yeah,
like marching,
sailors, yep.
And this goose comes out and they all freak out and run away from the goose. And I'm like, come on, you're in the military. Take this goose
See,
down.
And I like the fact for confidence courses and O courses that these seagulls are swooping in. It just adds to the training. Like, we play how we train. And
exactly.
That's exactly what we're going to do here. If you can't get through a confidence course, a little rope slide down over a little shitty muddy lake, you can't do combat.
Right.
You need a seagull.
It adds to the ambiance of the whole ordeal.
More
it makes
seagulls,
it a little better.
Not less.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry, I did the confidence course pre getting rid of the seagulls.
In my day,
bitch.
There was fucking... There was all kinds of pigeons running around.
Man, there were gulls everywhere.
And so, anyways, these seagulls are fucking shit up. And so every month or so, the military puts out contracts. Here's some shit we're looking for. And all the contractors who fill these roles step up and say, oh, we could do it. Here's our price. We could do it. Here's our price. So last month, the Navy Department put out one for the Marines saying they needed a contractor to provide falconry services to conduct hazing activities around the recruit mm-hmm. training area and recruit mess hall. So they're looking for a falcon that can haze the shit out of these seagulls, pretty much. Adam Chavez, who owns Adam's Falconry Service, said hazing the seagulls is exactly what his Harris Hawks do.
Adam's By the way, huge miss not calling it the Adam's Family Services.
Mm.
Adam's Falconry Service. Adam's Falconry Service secured a 5-year 100... Oh, God damn it. You guys know me in numbers. 127,440 contract.
$127,440 contract.
I have trouble with numbers. Anyways, he got that much of a contract to spend several weeks a year on the base to push the gulls back out to islands off the coast. So it's not even for a full year each time. For 5 years, for a couple months, he comes on. His
couple weeks, he makes 30 grand.
Exactly. So he and his team will spend 30 days straight at the depot and then a little more than 3 weeks as needed throughout the rest of the year. The Falconer's Harris Hawks, big raptor birds that typically live in desert regions, are trained to grab a fake seagull pulled by a remote-controlled car. They freak out when they see it, Chavez said of the seagulls. And this isn't the first time that he's worked on a military base. He said that the needs are pretty common in California, where he chases out birds nesting in big satellites on Fort Irwin in San Bernardino County, and ravens wreaking havoc at Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Center in 29 Palms. So basically anywhere, because we talked before too about the airplane hangars and how mm-hmm. that one group of, I think it was Air Force, they were allowed to use airsoft guns to take out the birds because they're shit.
And that's one thing that they mentioned in this article too, is that they said that they're coming in, these seagulls are coming in nesting and they could attack recruits and they're defecating all over the premises, which is funny to me because this is a captain that's saying all this stuff. And he says that they have to get their Marines to go and police call all this shit all out of all the different satellites and things like that. And he also goes on to say that pellet guns are authorized for them to do this. They're like, they can get the pellet guns because it will affect like their training and things like that, but they don't want to do that. Instead, they're going to bring in the Falcons. Because I think that's just on a Sunday, if you're at boot camp and you have a little senior drill instructor square away time and you're hanging out and you get to watch the Falcons swoom down and kill some seagulls, you're all about that.
Oh, that's
You'll just
so
be
fun.
Like, kill. Like every time they do it, like, kill.
How many recruits are going to get, I guess you don't have any discipline in your nasty little body, when they can't help mm-hmm. but turn their head a little bit to watch the Falcon do something? Also, I feel like this could backfire a little bit. This Falcon is on a Marine Corps boot camp base, seeing the drill instructors and them hazing and getting down on the recruits. What if the Falcons get tiny little hats, tiny little smoky hats, and then they start whipping the seagulls into shape?
A knife hand with a big old falcon wing is vicious.
What if they whip the seagulls into shape and they actually all take over the base together? And then they really fuck shit up.
Mm.
Think about it.
Good point, Kate.
I would just love to see a bird in a little hat.
I would too. I would too. I would have named my falcon business One Swoop, One Kill.
That's such a good name. What, I mean, I wonder too, like when he first started out, how the hell do you get into that job? How do you become a falconer, a falcon person?
Oh, you start off with parakeets.
Well, yeah, I think you're just one of those weird people who has an affinity for weird animals.
Yeah.
And you just start making your way up the chain. As Chap said, you start with parakeets. Next thing you know, you got a boa constrictor living in your bed. Next thing you know, you're thinking, oh, cool, it'd be cool to have a chimpanzee as a pet. And then your face gets mauled and you don't reach falconry. But that's usually the progression it takes.
Yeah,
absolutely right.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Oh, man. If you want to hear more about that, I'm sure there's books out there that are about falconry that you can listen to on Audible, because Audible is the best place for you to listen to any books. If you say Audible books, then that's the way people know that you're listening to it. Cons doesn't really count it as reading. I do. I love Audible. My family has been using it for a long time. Anytime we go on a long trip together, we always go on Audible on the little app and we pick out which one we want to do. It is awesome. You just have to go to audible.com/zero or text zero to 500-500. That's super easy. 500-500. It's incredible what they do with audiobooks now. If you want to check it out, go to audible.com/zero or text zero to 500-500. It's unbelievable. Go to stories.audible.com to check out more things about their website as well. You're going to love it. There's thousands of titles to choose from. You have nothing but time. Listen to some audiobooks and enrich your mind. Let's move on to round number four, which is a little game for Kate, because we've been doing Career Day series lately, and I really like that. People have chimed in and said that they have enjoyed that, learning about different things. We're going to open that up again. I need to do it again. It was a long day last time, so we're going to do that again.
I will say, Chaps, FYI, I hope your DMs and emails are opens, because anytime anyone asks me if we're still doing them, I'm like, yep, just send it over to Chaps. So you might want to check your DMs, buddy.
And I've seen those, and we're going to have a call out again, probably in like 2 weeks is whenever I'll do that again, because it has been fun learning about the different things. But there's some jobs from World War II that I want to ask Kate, if they were on there, which one she would say yes to. You too.
All right.
We'll see if you would like to do any of these jobs. The first one in World War II, and these are all jobs that no longer exist in the military, but they were around in World War II. The first one on the list is a blacksmith. In World War II, they still had blacksmiths, and many still made the items need to repair the equipment or the machinery. So I assume it would be like the guy that we had on that was a welder. But getting in there and going to our blacksmithing shop for the Marine Corps would be intense.
Hell yes, I would do it. I just picture, I would still...
Lady Blacksmiths are fucking fire.
That's a great name right there, Lady Blacksmith.
Lady Blacksmith. Well, yeah. So I would also demand that they build me an old school, like, little, like, blacksmith shop like you'd see in the medieval days.
Yeah. Oh, where you come in, you move, like, the leather aside to come in?
Exactly. It would be super old school. And it would be, like, in a little knoll somewhere, in a little tree-filled knoll somewhere in the base. Like, oh, you got to go see the blacksmith. You better go on a journey. You open the thing. There I am. I got my little helmet thing down. And you're like, oh, who is this? I pull it off. I do that thing with my hair where I whip my hair down. And they're like, oh, my God. She's beautiful.
Your hair's not in a bun? You're out of uniform?
Oof.
That's the thing.
Nobody fucks with blacksmith.
I got the strongest arms on the base now, pal.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's what I think being a blacksmith would be cool. To expound on that a little bit, is I feel like it's one of those positions where you're the last line, right? And if you can't fix it, it can't be fixed. So everyone is relying on you. So you're a huge asset to many people. So I think that'd be a great job.
Also, last thing on the side, I would create little branders for all the infantry units that want to haze each other and brand each other. I'd be like, $50, I'll give you one.
Yeah, you can create custom ones. Also, what's the uniform of the day?
Overalls?
No, boots and utes, I think. Boots and utes with the all-weather gloves.
Yep, yeah, and a big leather apron.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. All right, the next one up, there is a job called just a meat cutter, basically a butcher for the military. And that all you do is cut meats. They had troops that were essential. Usually it was ladies, and they would bring in whole carcasses of beef or lamb, and you just had to cut them fuckers up. Kate, you signing up to be a butcher?
No, definitely not. I feel like blacksmith is sexy. Lady who's just chopping through blood and muscle
like pig guts
all day. Here's
why I'm doing butcher, because I could very much have a side hustle selling meats, selling fresh cut meats. sell on the side.
Sell them to the Tiger King.
Yep.
This Boom. Is true.
The sound right. making a little extra scratch, so I'm definitely signing up.
And having a butcher, like you talk about a skill that's transferable to the outside. If you open up one of them artisan shops in Brooklyn and you're one of the first ones to do that, buddy, you're rolling in the dough.
That's a really good point. That is a good point. And plus, too, I feel like people would be extra nice to you. Like if you're on ship or something, because come on, give me the good cuts. Well, what's
you might get
for
a good cut, a nice marbling on there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Love that. The next one up, this one is a no-brainer. I'm going to go ahead, before I even say it, all of us are doing this one, horse breaker.
Oh.
No.
No, that's not what you think it is.
Not like you whip them and shit. Well, I guess you would.
You
horse
break
breakers
them in.
Would train the horses and mules so that they could be used in mounted units. They also trained them to carry packs and hitch the wagons and carts, and they weren't used in World War II to the extent they were in the First World War, but still troops relied on horses and mules to cross terrain and passable to mechanized units. For example, the 533 Second Brigade, a long-range patrol group created the service in the mountains of Burma, was largely self-sufficient due to 3,000 mules assigned to it, all shipped from the United States. That would be a fun little cruise to be on. Talk about, you basically be like the fucking donkey version of Noah.
So now I've kind of warmed up to it a little. I think, so also, this would be another one where I would do it, but I request a niche area of the base, like you come on to my ranch. You know, there's horseshoes, there's a name at the top of it.
They still have that at Pendleton.
Yes, they do. Yeah. So that's where it would be.
Quantico, too.
You come in on boots and utes, but when I turn around, no ass on my pants.
Oh.
Wow.
That's
Chaps.
It. Exactly.
All right, next one up is artist and animation artist. So they would have cartoonists. That would be a good job for you.
I follow a few of them on Twitter. They're still active duty troops who go out into the battlefields and follow units into the field, and they draw it. They document
artist
it. Artist recruits. Well, there's like actual artists. It's like a real thing in the military, a real MOS.
Yeah, I think it's part of combat camera.
Yeah, and so I follow a few of them on social media. It's incredible the work they do, and they really do capture a unique essence of whatever is happening in a really cool way. I would love to do that, except mine would look like shitty stick figures and they'd be like, okay, what the fuck, like I'm with a unit for like, what is it, Not Another Teen Movie, where he's painting and then he turns it around and it's just that smiley face or whatever. I would be working for 3 days and have like nothing to show for it, but yeah, I would totally do that.
Yeah, I can't draw for anything, so this would be a nice, if I could actually learn that skill.
Yeah.
And also, just real quick, shout out to the Army Mules, Raider, Striker, and Raider.
Raider, Striker, and Raider. Shout out to them.
Ranger, sorry.
All right, the next question is for Cons. This one. What is a crystal grinder?
I have no clue.
So a crystal grinder, this is a job that they had in World War II that many of the radios actually required crystals to operate. And the crystal grinder would grind and calibrate these crystals to pick up specific radio frequencies. The personal radios were forbidden on the front lines, but crystal radio set lacked external power sources, so they couldn't be detected by the enemy. For this reason, troops improvised crystal radios from a variety of materials, including pencils and razor blades, in order to listen to music and news. These contraband radios were dubbed foxhole radios.
Whoa, I never heard of that. I did not know that at all. I don't even know where you'd begin to calibrate crystal.
How do you figure that shit out?
Exactly. Right. Like, I don't believe in any of it.
You know what would work?
Grind up that pencil so we can so we can listen to the fucking Dodgers play.
Yeah. I will never understand how we can see each other right now while we're doing that. I don't understand how I'm hearing your voices. None of that, so forget it. I could not be a crystal grinder. Though it does sound cool. If I was the one who stood next to the calibrator person, I just got to like churn a big old thing of rocks, hell yeah, I'm in. That's it.
Anything with stones. I wouldn't call myself a crystal grinder, though. I would call myself like a geologist.
Yes.
Geologist specialist, I guess, if you're enlisted.
Yeah, geospecialist.
Yeah, geospecialist. There you go. The next one up is called a cooper. Any idea what that is?
Wow.
I don't know, but I like it just because I felt, hey, coop. I feel like I would be the coop.
I think you're actually right, because coop might have to do with poop, too, because they were the workers who built and repaired the wooden buckets, barrels, and casks and kegs used to pack, store, supply equipment. So you're just basically, I mean, you're essentially supply. Like, I guess you'd be logistics if you're building it, like a carpenter.
I think I wouldn't mind doing that one. I feel like you put on some tunes, you're hammering away, and you're not the one who actually has to do the logistics.
Very monotonous, though, if you're just building buckets all day.
Yeah.
Perfect for me. I'm in.
Just going through the same thing. Yeah, because you'd be, Oh my God, dude. If you use the same uniform of the day that our blacksmith friends have, you wear that, and then you have a pack of smokes, you're just in there like just
cigarette dangling.
How you doing? Oh, just living the dream, building another bucket, see?
Yep, exactly.
Going through it there.
I'm out on this one. I don't want to build buckets.
I don't think this is the first one that I think I would not want to do at all. I also wouldn't want to do the crystal grinder job. That job seemed like it would suck. Model maker. This one is where they demonstrate how ships are loaded with supplies. The military model makers were charged with creating scale models. I actually saw this one on a video that I stumbled across on YouTube. Where did you know that the Navy has a fake ocean that they built?
What?
Yes, it's a fake ocean built to scale, and this is where they test all their different ships and shit.
Oh,
they
shit.
Build these scale size to see how if the seas are coming in choppy, to see how each boat would react. They build everything to scale, and it's a huge room with like a huge-ass pool, and they have all this different equipment that moves on these hydraulic pumps that creates different kinds of waves where they can create a chop or an undercurrent or a rip current and all these different things, different type seas, and how each one of their new vessels can go through it, and how they can use catamarans and all different kinds of stuff. They still do this, but I think it's more civilians than military that actually do it.
It makes sense that they're doing this, and let me just be the first to say, I would love to go swim in that wave pool, because it would probably be a lot of fun.
Boogie board.
Yeah.
Or what if you have a drown me challenge?
Yeah. Give me your best shot, bub.
Every dad would love to have their kids in this on summer vacation, because it would just be like the kids on the back of a tube whenever you're pulling them on like a jet ski or a little boat and trying to get your kids to fly off of it, trying to drown me in this naval ocean, daddy.
Yeah. Lieutenant Dan, everybody gets to have that moment on the top of the boat where you're like, is this all you got?
This boat!
Exactly, yeah. That would be the moment that I would like. Also, I wish that they would live stream every test they do. I know for, I guess, security purposes they can or whatever, but I would love to watch this.
That people go bananas when one of them actually sinks.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
All right, next one up is Pigeoneer. Not a Falconer, but Pigeoneer. So this is actually like very Harry Potter. So they would have a capsule containing a message that was written on onion skin paper to carry a carrier pigeon before releasing the bird over Hawaii in January of 1943. They were doing this. Pigeoneers were responsible for all aspects of their birds' lives. They would breed them, train them, and care for them whenever they were delivering messages. Some birds were trained specifically for night flying, while others learned that food could be found at one location of water or another. According to the U.S. Army's Communication Electronics Museum, more than 90% of the messages carried by pigeons were successfully delivered. That's a high success rate for pigeons.
Yes, it really is. That's badass. I love the thought, too, of like it's something from start to finish. It's how you trained it is the success. Like, so you can, every time a message gets to its location, like, you did that. That's awesome. Yeah. That's
so,
cool.
As we know from our friends over there at Spit and Chicklets, pigeon is a derogatory term, so I want nothing to do with it.
See, I want something to do with it because I think this is like the cool version of what happens on Game of Thrones. I always wondered how they had this because they would deliver via a crow or a raven. They would send it to another area of the world, that another area of Westeros, and they would have it come. Like, how do you do that?
Also,
like, I know a lot about animal training, successful approximation, getting them to do certain things. Long distance, for a bird to fly long distance to be able to find something, that is something that blows my mind.
Also, our social media guy, Kyle, just sent us this photo of a pigeoner during the war, and he's wearing his full pack, and then the pigeon is also wearing, like, a tiny little flak jacket kind of thing. And it's
he's wearing, like, a molly bag.
Yeah, I will admit, that looks cute.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, if you're feeling nervous on the chopper, like, you could just, it's like a little pet. Like,
it's
that's what I think.
It's an emotional support animal. It's an emotional support animal.
I think those pigeons are awesome, man. Like, just being able to be around them. And if you would have showed me that picture before we started podcasting today, I would say that that was a fella who just happened across a pigeon and decided to take it as, like, a fob mascot.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to number 9, a field artillery sound recorder. Do you know what that is?
You just record the sound of the field artillery? I don't know.
These troops had the sickest beats until the development of radar. Sound was raging was one of the most effective way to locate the enemy. So essentially they acted like they were dolphins. They would use sound waves to locate where the enemy was.
That's awesome. I would do that. Yeah.
I would have said, if you said, do we have this technology now? I would have said no. The fact that we had it in the 1940s is insane. Mm. We haven't done shit with our lives in the last like 70, 80 years.
You know what? Isn't that crazy how much of the military, like the stuff is still the stuff we used back in the 40s? It's like we couldn't have figured out a better way to do this by now.
DARPA, no offense, but I'm looking at you guys again.
Like, if DARPA had an article that was like, oh, we figured out how to use echolocating for different troops and movement, we're like, yeah, right, bitch. No, you didn't. You liar. That'll work just like the F-35 does. And the last one on the list for the top 10 jobs that you might want to have from World War II would be an airplane woodworkers. C-47 Skytrains tow Waco CG-4 gliders over the Netherlands. And they would go in, and all you had to do was work on these wooden planes. It still blows my mind, the fact that there was wooden planes. Like, the fact that wood planes were a thing is strange.
Mm-hmm. I'm in. I like playing with paper airplanes.
Our guy Charlie Plum has a wooden plane.
Yeah, probably.
That's crazy. I don't think wood and think of anything beyond the Wright brothers and what they were doing in Kitty Hawk. So the fact that, again, in the 40s, we were still using wooden planes, what were we thinking?
I would be like Gibbs from NCIS, and I'd be whittling mine in the basement of my house. And when I was done, they'd be like, "Wow, are we gonna get it out?" And I'd be like, "That's a great point."
You have somebody that is whittling something in their garage or crafting something in their garage. What's the most impressive thing, except for a plane, that somebody could be wood making?
Ooh, a real boy.
Yes, Pinocchio is up there.
Like a little go kart type thing, like a soapbox car.
A wooden go-kart, yes.
Don't scoff at me like a wooden go-kart is so crazy when they're making wooden planes.
A wooden go-kart would be ridiculous. But my answer, whenever I go through Instagram feeds and I see one of those wooden boats, like a high-gloss wooden boat.
Yep.
When we went, my wife and I went on our 10th anniversary trip. We took this trip to some lake in Texas. I forget what it's called. But there was all these wooden boat shows, and people had painted their, like, the hulls were teal or green, and then the tops of them, you could see the wood grain, and it looked like the old parquet floor at the Celtics Arena. Beautiful. I walk into somebody's shop and they have a boat sitting there that they're making, and they're in there glossing it, and they're like, oh, come on in. There's a PBR in the little fridge. And they don't have the PBR. Ironically, they have it because they like the taste and it's cheap. Mm-hmm. That is a fucking real shop worker.
Real quick. Agree. No free ads. Do you guys like that beer that you just mentioned?
PBR? Yeah, yeah. I like PBR.
Same.
If it's good enough for Clint Eastwood, it's good enough for me.
Boom. Oh, I agree.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our actual career day interview, who this week we're going to have somebody who's doing something a little bit different. He's talking about DARPA. Whenever DARPA puts in a technology, a new technology, they actually have to test it. And this is the guy who really goes out and sees it in the field with Marine units that get it in his hands. This is Patrick McCavitt. He is a Marine Corps, I believe, captain. Here he is. All right, now on Zero Block 30's Career Day, we have Pat McCavitt, who is a Naval Academy graduate and a Marine currently stationed at Marine Corps Base Quantico, logistics specialist by trade. But you're doing a little bit something a little bit different now, right?
That is correct, yeah. So right now I'm actually doing a payback tour. Marine Corps paid for me to go get a master's degree. And as part of that, do a payback tour in that degree field. So I am an operations analyst currently, and I work for Marine Corps operational test and evaluation activity.
So what does that mean? What do you actually do?
So what I do day to day is we test all ground equipment that the Marine Corps is looking at purchasing. So anything new, JLTV is an example. So replacing the Humvees, I'm working on a new turret system to go on top of the JLTVs, MTVR, stuff like that. So anything the Marine Corps is going to buy, it needs to be tested operationally. We're the guys that do that. So my job in the test team is I help come up with how we're going to measure what is a successful test and what isn't. And then I do all the data analysis on the back end with the help of some other smart folks. And then we present our reports up to the assistant commandant.
So I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we talked about DARPA a little bit. Mm-hmm. So would you work with them and like see what they're developing and see if it would actually work for the Marine Corps?
Yeah, potentially. So we usually come in on the backside. So the guys who'd look at that would be MARCOR SysCom, so Systems Command. Those are the guys who actually control the money and can make purchases for the Marine Corps. Once Syscom says, hey, we think we want to buy this thing, they come to us and say, is this the right thing for us to buy to fulfill whatever the mission is? And then we're the ones who test it and say, you know, kind of, we don't say yes or no. We just present the facts. We say, hey, here's what we did. Here's what, how the system performed, you know, and then there's a general officer somewhere who's going to make that call, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down. Do we buy this thing?
So it's a lot of writing, I'd imagine.
A lot of math. And yeah, a lot of writing. Yeah. That's, yeah. So I was
terrible.
Yeah. I was a history major.
Your job sounds fucking awful. I got it. Yeah. Like, it sucks. I was a dog guy. I just play with a dog and you're kind of write reports and do math.
The cool part is, in terms of, you know, what I'm doing, I still get to travel, still go get out, interact with Marines. Cause we actually take these pieces of equipment, we give them to actual Marines. So we'll go to a unit. So we went down and we worked with 3-8 with the JLTV. It's like, hey, 3-8, you got a bunch of JLTVs. We're going to run you guys through some missions and kind of, we're just in the background, just taking notes and collecting data. And then, you know, it's kind of we try to be as transparent as possible to the using unit so they can act as if we're not there and they're just executing the mission. So we get to get out and travel a little bit and do some fun Marine Corps stuff, but yeah, it's a lot of cubicle time. But you know, root word of officer's office, you know, I don't care what you do. You're going to be in an office.
So. Thank you for saying that. So we have, so you say like designing a new turret, for example. So do you do it whenever you're going out to a unit like 3-8? Do you first start off with like, all right, I want to get what the BC says about it, the battalion commander, or what the sergeant major says, then what the master sergeant says in the platoon level, and then break it down. And I actually want to talk to the folks that are E3s, the Lance Corporals that are actually operating this thing, get their feedback on it.
So we do the opposite. We actually start with those E3s, and then we're going to build our way up. So I want to know the guy who has to stand in that thing for 6 hours during a convoy. I want to know what he thinks about it. I want
to
know.
It's precedent to my ass and my back. You need to know that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I need to know that. I need to know, can you fit in it with all your gear on? Can you actually shoulder the weapon? Is it too high, too low, whatever it is? So we start with that guy. And then we work our way up. So if we need to, usually, at least the tests I've been a part of, I've only been here since the summer. But the one I've been a part of, like the highest we really went was company command. And then battalion commander came out to just kind of observe, see what was going on. And he gave some feedback to the acquisitions guys that were purchasing the actual items that were out there.
Is there any that the Marines just say, this thing fucking sucks, we can't use it at all?
That has happened. I have not personally witnessed it. But yes, that has absolutely happened. And that's what we report. We work directly. So my colonel reports directly to the assistant commandant. So there, nobody else in the chain of command can step in and be like, no, I really want this thing. We're going to make this happen. Mm-hmm. He turns around and says, hey, you know, ACMAC, here's what we found. And then, you know, decisions are made at higher levels. But we present unvarnished truth.
And that job has got to be tough, too, because if you're taking the feedback from, say, a PFC, Lance Corporal, and putting it into professional language that's going to go to the commandant's desk is almost like translating different languages.
Yes, there is some careful wordplay. You know, we like to church it up a little bit. But yeah, we have gotten feedback where it's like, this thing fucking sucks. My truck is better. And it's like, all right, thanks, Devil Dog. Like, we're going to, you know, scrub that up a little bit, make it nice.
And we don't like anything, really. So that makes it tough, too.
Yeah, it's good, though. And again, limited exposure to testing. We have found that the Marines take it seriously. And it's unit dependent. You've got to get that buy-in from the senior leaders, from the NCOs, from the staff NCOs. But the Marines take it seriously because we tell them, it's like, hey, man, what you say matters. And this is going to go somewhere. And you're going to see this again. Like, it is going to hit the fleet if you just gaff this off. So the guys take it seriously. And we get really good pointers, you know, stuff we wouldn't think of, too. It's like, hey, you know, so IARs are new since I left the fleet. So I had to go to grad school for 2 years. So I've been out of the fleet for almost 3 years now. IARs were just coming in. And now,
and what's an IAR for those that don't
know? Yeah, so the infantry automatic rifle. So this is the new replacement for the SAW, squad automatic weapon. So that thing's got a really fat buttstock. So it doesn't fit in the normal holders that we have inside the vehicles that were designed for M4s and M16s. So we're like sitting in the trucks and they're like, yeah, this thing doesn't fit. And we're like, oh shit. Yeah. Look at that. Okay. I never would have thought of that. And neither did the engineers. So that's something that we can pass back up the chain and, you know, try to get that fixed. Little stuff like that.
And I imagine because there is a lot of writing, a lot of math, that there's days where you walk in and you're like, I don't want to sit here and do this. I want to be back out with the actual Marines and being around Marines. Yeah. Is your job now fulfilling in a different way than being, like, say, around Marines as a platoon commander?
Yeah, for sure. It's very different. And there are days. I know I'm going to be out of the fleet for 5 years. So 2 years at school, 3 year payback tour sitting in Quantico. So I am not going to be in the fleet for 5 years. And that
you're like the very typical Quantico officer that we talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's rough. That's really rough.
Because you don't ever want to be that guy, really.
No, you don't. You don't. But at the same time, you have to realize like what you're doing matters. So for me, what I try to do is A, stay in touch with guys that are still in the fleet, reach out to those subject matter experts. So I know that what I'm saying in the office that could potentially impact how equipment is tested, like that I'm right. So staying in touch with those guys. But at the same time, I'm seeing a part of the Marine Corps that I never would have seen. And I did not choose this. I did not want to go to grad school. I did not want to do a payback tour. We don't have an option. We were told what we were going to do. Yeah, so my option was, hey, you can do this or you can be a civilian.
Where did
so
they send you to school?
So I went to Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California.
That's not a bad spot.
No, it's not. It's pretty picturesque. I spent most of my time in the library because I was a history major in undergrad and math is not my strong suit. So I spent a lot of time in the library, not on the golf course. But and I'm seeing a part of the Marine Corps I never would have seen. Interacting with very senior leaders, which is very interesting, very different. And I really enjoy that. And I get to kind of, we have time now to have big thoughts. We're sitting around the office and, you know, we're not BSing about when the trucks are going to show up or, you know, why the fuel's jacked up or whatever it is. Like we're talking about like, hey, how do we think that this new operating concept is going to affect the Marine Corps as a whole and how that affects acquisitions and what we're trying to do. So that's pretty neat. And it's great too, because 6 years in the fleet, 2 deployments, you know, just nonstop, go, go, go. Now I've got time with my family, which is great. So this is kind of like my payback chill out time. And then, cause I know when I go back to the fleet, I'll probably be an OPSO or an XO and it's going to be right back to nonstop. So
going from a pretty, like, I guess, junior captain at the 6 year spot, like a year or two as a captain, and then going back, your interactions with senior leaders, senior Marine leaders, what has caught you off guard that you wish you would have known as a more junior captain?
I don't think you have an appreciation for the big picture. And, you know, because really all you see is what is affecting you directly. You know, the biggest picture I ever saw was kind of sitting in like MEW staff meetings when I was on the MEW. Occasionally I'd be sitting in the staff meetings with the colonel. And that was the biggest aperture I really got of the Corps. Now I'm sitting at headquarters Marine Corps. And now it's like, hey, this decision that someone's going to make, that doesn't affect, you know, 2,200 guys in a MEW. It affects 182,000 Marines. And that is, the scale of that is just massive, astronomical. So that's something that's been really interesting for me to see.
I bet. That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us in Quantico. I want the people to know, even though we are in coronavirus season, your hair still is in regs. We don't know how long that will last, but I imagine for a while up there at Quantico, they don't fuck around with that stuff. We appreciate you joining us, man. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Been a long episode so far, so if you're feeling hungry and need a little mid-episode snack, go and check out our friends at Feltman's of Coney Island. They have a great hot dog that is comprised of people. They all made by people who are veterans, essentially. The majority of the company has served in the military. They have 3 West Point grads there, 31 total years in uniform, and 113 months deployed overseas. And this is their new company that they're starting. It's Feltman's. It's 100% natural all beef hot dogs that are nitrate and safety vacuum sealed in plastic to stay fresh 60 days in the refrigerator, which is huge. I have a bunch in my fridge right now. I've been watching the other day. I think it was Saturday. Yeah. I woke up early. It was like 6:30. I couldn't sleep. And there was some Korean baseball on TV. I went into the old fridge, pulled out one of those Feltman hot dogs, made it, had mustard, pickle. I had a beer before anybody even woke up in my house. I had polished it off at like 6:45. Everybody starts coming out of the rooms at 7:30 like, oh, Dad, you just wake up? Like, yeah, just getting ready to have my coffee. Little they know, I was fucking 5 innings deep watching my beloved Dinos.
Having your own real spring during these crazy times. I also have to say it feels good when we – because you are – picky about what we promote. There have been things you've turned down that you're like, no, this feels good, because we've had Stoolies and Zero Block 30 followers hitting us up saying, we ordered these and they're great. And that makes me feel really good. So people have been ordering them and really enjoying them. And because, you know, a bad hot dogs is so disappointing. These are legit good. Like, we've all been eating them too. So they're delicious.
You would think, like, oh, hot dog, what's the big difference? And there is a huge difference.
I know.
Love you know, my mom, whenever I was younger, had a hot dog experience that changed my outlook on hot dogs forever, essentially. What? Because when I was growing up, we would just get, if you're having hot dogs, you're not trying to go out there and get the fanciest shit in the world. Like, if you're from the area of the country that I'm from, you're just trying to put a little something in your belly. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes that can be a big mistake. We were coming back from a place where it's like a natural spring. Have you guys ever swam in a natural spring?
No, bucket list.
Yeah, down in Austin.
Yeah, so they have natural springs there. Oh, you're talking Barton Springs. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice one. But like ones in Florida is in the woods. They'll have like a little hole that you can jump into. Sometimes a little spring will lead up to it. It's like 65 degrees naturally year long. It constantly comes up from the ground. How that works, I don't understand. But we spent all day going to the springs, chilling, working up an appetite. And my mom was like, you know what? There's nothing around this area because it's usually these places are in the country. So we stop in and we go to a little gas station in the middle of nowhere. My mom comes out with three hot dogs. They have three hot dogs for a dollar type of deal whenever you're in the middle of nowhere in Florida, and she hands it to me. My mom spent all day swimming with us in the water. She puts the gas station hot dog in her mouth, immediately opens the door to our Buick Woodside station wagon and throws up. And she's like, this hot dog is terrible. Don't eat it, kids. This is the worst hot dog I've ever had. And from that point, I knew if you don't have a quality hot dog, my friend, fucking keep it. So if you go to Feltman's at Coney Island, you will want to keep these hot dogs, especially if you use the mustard that they have there.
Yep. That's the other thing that we need to really point out, that it's not just the hot dogs, but their mustard, quality mustard.
It is a quality mustard.
And real quick,
how
do you take your hot dog?
Like, just generally. Now, I think this is going to get me some hate, because here's my ideal hot dog.
Okay.
My ideal hot dog, I have a lovely slice of dill pickle on the side of it, like a spear that I put in there. I also like I like spicy mustard or Creole mustard on there. And this is where people are going to disagree. I like mine with cheese on it.
Oh, I love hot dogs with cheese on them.
My dad he used to do cheese for us growing up on our hot dogs all the time.
Do Chicago style is my favorite though, hands down. But yeah
having a little
really
pepperoncini on there.
Oh yeah, but you can jazz them up. A hot dog is a blank canvas, my friends. Get weird with your wieners.
Chili dog, a freshly made chili dog is unbelievable. What about you, Cons?
I just go spicy mustard, Feltman spicy mustard now, and relish.
Oh, like the dill relish.
Yep.
Like the sweet relish. Yep. I hate that shit.
I love it.
I don't know why. Any of those pickles. Anything that's not dill and it's pickle, I'm not a fan. I also don't like what is it called? Honey? Not honey.
Sauerkraut?
Mustard?
Honey mustard?
No. Anyways, let's move on to round number five. We're gonna talk a little bit about Jerry Stiller. So Jerry Stiller, tell us a little bit about him, Kate.
All right, so this is from Gina Piccolo at the LA Times. Jerry Stiller.
Great name, by the way.
Mm. Oh, Gina Piccolo. It's me, Gina Piccolo. Jerry Stiller, best known for his Emmy-nominated portrayal of the outrageous and combustible Frank Costanza on Seinfeld, has passed away from natural causes at the age of 92. Stiller's time on the Jerry Seinfeld sitcom not only cemented his place in American pop culture, as he once recalled, it represented the best years of my life as an actor. Born June 8th in 1927 in Brooklyn, New York, Jerry Stiller was the oldest of four kids raised in an impoverished Polish-Jewish household. He found his comedic chops as a child, eager to keep the peace and distract his parents from fighting. As an actor known for inhabiting bombastic curmudgeons, Stiller later admitted, "I stole all their material."
So I love that, because you are like a product of who you are. Like, it's a caricature of the things that you grow up around. And you could see that. Like, when you think of a stereotypical person who is Jewish born in the 1920s in New York, it is Jerry Stiller.
Yeah.
And the things that he accomplished in his life after he grew up and went to school and fell in love with acting, and he went to World War II. When he came back and used his GI Bill to go to Syracuse to learn how to do some of the things in acting, I think it is a wonderful, wonderful American dream story. Now he has a son who is like one of the biggest movie stars in Hollywood, who's married to somebody who was this, one of the stars on Hey Dude, by the way. Great show, Hey Dude.
Yes, I forgot about that place.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just pretty incredible. And I didn't realize that he had been in the Army. I had no idea that, that he was towards the end of World War II that he was in. So that was totally new to me. I was completely,
And Ben Stiller has talked about, because Ben Stiller has been involved with several different organizations, like one of them is Home for Veterans. And Ben Stiller talked about he is involved in it because of the lessons that his dad learned. And his dad, Ben, said that growing up that his dad would constantly say, like, oh, I wasn't really involved in World War II. I was later. I didn't get to Italy until later. And I think that we see that in a lot of veterans. Like, I've seen different veterans that, even around Lackland, where I go and occasionally, I would see different older veterans sitting around at the pharmacy waiting for their medication. And some of them will wear, like, the World War II hat and the Korean War hat. And I'll ask them, where did you serve in World War II? And almost shyly and sheepishly, they'll say, oh, well, I was here, but I didn't get there until 47 or 46. So it was really like the latter half. These qualifiers, and it's like, my man, you still did what was asked of you. You went whenever you were called to go, and you did that. I feel so bad that veterans have to do that. We see that now, like with Afghanistan and with late in Iraq, like, oh yeah, I went to Iraq, but it was way later. It was after everything. You don't have to have those qualifiers. You did exactly what you were asked to do at the time you were asked to do it.
Even still, I love this one anecdote that he wrote in here that maybe he got there at the end or whatever, but Cons, you'll love this. It says, on a football team with his World War II unit in Italy, the 5'6" Stiller said he tackled the most hated MP in southern Italy. They carried him off, and the crowd chanted my number in Italian. I realized I enjoyed violence. So
love that.
What a classic moment. This little guy taking out, of course, the most hated MP, of which there are many. So that's a pretty cool moment that he had there. That's really neat. I didn't know he served.
I think it's just interesting when you play such an iconic character as, George Costanza's father, that you're susceptible to being remembered strictly for that. And it's very clear that he's done so much else in his life
That's worth remembering. And because of those outbursts and things that he was so good at.
I mean, we have to, please pipe in the all-time greatest voicemail of all time when he calls. He's like, Jerry, it's George Costanza. Mr. Steinbrenner's here. George is dead. Call me back.
I'm not sure I leave a message. Jerry, it's Frank Costanza. Mr. Steinbrenner's here. George is dead. Call me back.
Oh man, that's everybody's dad. And how proud would you be if you were Ben Stiller of your dad? Because he not only like served in World War II and was by all accounts a great father growing up, but somebody that everybody loves. Like if you had the type of parent who whenever they do pass and it affects so many people on social media where it's like trending, and because they were a nice guy, because they were funny and they were affable to people that were there around. Because stories of being around show business for 70 years, if you were a dick, those stories would get out big time.
Yeah, definitely.
And he wasn't that way. 92 years, living life the right way, having a great family, beautiful grandkids and all that. That's the way to go. His wife died a few years ago, and now, whatever you believe, they're hanging out, chilling together. I think that's a beautiful sentiment. Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. Cons, we'll start with you.
Two really quick. So obviously, you know, with college seniors graduating in 2020, it's very unorthodox. And my girlfriend's niece graduated from Penn State this past weekend. Congratulations to Jordan. So we were asked to send a video just saying a congratulations. And Alex and I decided to take that as an opportunity to provide some good life advice. So if you are a college grad and you need some good life advice, I posted on my Instagram at Captain Cons some really good life advice in there. Trust me.
There you go.
And then also, I don't know where you guys are going to stand on this. We had the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds fly over the other week. And I think that's cool. And I get what they were doing. But then I think it was last week.
JetBlue
was like, yeah, we're gonna fly over Manhattan to support the frontline workers, And it's like, you know, good initiative, bad execution. And I just, I tweeted it too. I was like, maybe don't fly commercial airlines really low over New York City. Was that like a crazy thought that I had?
The only thing I saw, I've seen a lot of that sentiment, a lot of people tweeting that out. And so I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. That was kind of strange. The only thing I'll say in their defense is that their headquarters are here in New York City, like only like maybe a quarter mile from my apartment. They have their huge JetBlue building. So they're like a New York company. So I kind of get it. Whereas the other airlines aren't like so much like their business end isn't headquartered here. But yeah, that was a weird. And then a lot of people, I don't know. I always wonder how like.
Makes you wonder about UPS though. Why aren't they doing a parade through New York?
Indeed.
Like, have all the UPS trucks go by and don't show in their support.
Yeah. Well, I always wonder though, like say I'm PR, the head of PR for a company. I feel like before, hey guys, before we do this, let's sit down and think of all the possible implications this could have. People could be saying, hey, skyscrapers. Airplanes, New York, not the best combo. People aren't loving it. Hey, this might seem like we're trying to promote ourselves during a horrible time. Hey, this might, like, where are those people at these
companies?
Well,
somebody had to have the balls to be the first person to put stuff on Memorial Day sale.
True, yeah, you're right. Mattresses, 20% off. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine being the first one. Now, listen, I know this is about people who were killed in combat. What about if we offer them 20% off?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So at least, their families can mourn in comfort.
Because you know soon there's going to be a 9/11 sale. Has to be.
Oh gosh, I really hope not. Because I mean,
eventually there will be.
Well,
like, I'm surprised
Pearl
there's
Harbor
not
Day.
Like
yeah, Pearl, yeah. No Pearl Harbor,
Pearl Harbor blowout day.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Whoa, problematic.
Yikes. I'm just saying hypothetically. I'm not saying that we'd offer 20% off or anything like that.
No.
But yeah, so I don't know. Because I also think too, I think we forget sometimes because we're all over the internet. We live on the internet. That we're very in tune with things that are going on. Imagine if you just didn't see the news that day and you're not on the internet and then all of a sudden you see these commercial airlines or airplanes flying super low. Wouldn't that freak you the hell out?
Oh, yeah.
So that's my gripe. This is not, I will say, I'm not telling them to do anything besides what they already did. I will not say to kick rocks. This is not a kick rock offense.
Yeah. All right. Kate, what do you got?
No, I feel like I rambled enough in the start of the episode. I just hope now that I can figure out how to register my car and keep on the upswing. I hope I keep on the upswing now. So get my shit together. We'll see. Who knows?
Yesterday was Mother's Day here. Yes. And so we went out and I picked up some food. Like we went to a local chain restaurant to go pick up some food for the fam. Because for some reason, Annalise didn't want me to cook. Maybe that shows my skills have diminished some, but she wanted me just to go pick it up. I went, it was supposed to be at 5:45 to go pick it up. I didn't actually get it till 6:30. And this is what I kind of want to talk about. There's so many restaurants that are offering pickup and delivery right now that I think that we are so accustomed to getting things when we want it that we don't look at people and how they feel as people. Whenever I went into the restaurant to get the delivery, people were being such unbelievable dicks to the staff there, like to the different workers who work at the front, the cooks in the back, yelling because it's their food's 30 minutes late. Like, let's take a step back and remember that people doing this are fucking human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, it is unbelievable how people will freely and openly treat other people like garbage because they work in the service industry. I don't understand that at all. Understand, you could see it. Like in this place yesterday, you could see the receipts that were constantly coming out of this machine. Order after order after order. 500, the lady said. They were 500 orders behind because they had to stop Uber Eats. They had to stop Postmates because they were getting so many different places. Think outside yourself for a second. Think about how these people feel. They're stressed out. It's coronavirus season. They're trying to do the best they fucking can. They're not getting paid any money. Stop being a dick to people just because you can.
No,
just because you can
I want my
mean
burger now.
I fucking hate that, man.
I want it now.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah, and just I think that's just good life advice even beyond this.
Don't
whole,
be a dick.
Yeah, don't be a dick. But, you know, treat people in the service industry with respect. Because they're there to serve you, and that doesn't give you the right to just treat them like crap.
I mean, they and I was nice. Like, I hung out. I was like, oh, don't worry about it. I understand things happen because they were, like, really apologetic. Mm-hmm. And then I was super nice. I was like, oh, I'll just chill over here. I'll just sit outside on the bench whenever it's ready. Just bring it out. And they gave me – they hooked me up with extra asparagus and extra mashed potatoes.
Whoa.
So sometimes kindness pays off, my friends.
Kindness and stinky pee.
Yeah, I forgot. That's the scary thing when you wake up the next day and you forget you ate asparagus and you're like, oh, man, my piss stinks. It's on the retreat.